let everybody come in. And then right when they said, everybody go to your car now, everyone rushed, not knowing the hail was coming like 1 minute after that. I mean, we really could not get to our cars. The cars were like, you know, a 5 minute walk, but with all that crowd, there was no way you were going to get there in 5 minutes. But it was just too dangerous with that hail. That hail could have knocked you out.
My God.
Everybody was going, ow, ow, ow.
Welcome to Weather Ready or Not. I'm your host, Dakota Smith. This is a conversation I had with my mom about her night out to see Steely Dan perform that was rudely interrupted by a nasty thunderstorm. This conversation spurred my recent interest in weather event safety, particularly lightning safety. I was curious, are venues adequately prepared to protect their patrons from severe weather? And is the public sufficiently aware of the risks of severe weather and lightning? Before we attempt to answer those questions, I'd like to introduce a new member of the Weather Ready or Not team, meteorologist Becky Elliott. Becky, welcome to the team.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to come on board this project.
Yeah, so when I asked you about it, you were gung-ho, ready to go. So I'm curious, for the listeners, what is your background and why were you kind of ready to do something like this?
My background is in operational meteorology. I've been a forecaster for about 7 years now, but I've always been really focused on the impacts of weather and how people perceive the weather, how they react to it, you know, what kind of lead time did they have, where do they get their resources. And I'm going back for my master's in emergency management to really be able to help people react, prepare for disasters, and obviously specifically weather disasters. So Weather Ready or Not podcast seemed right up my alley.
And you're doing next month's episode. What can we expect from that?
So next month's episode is going to be very interesting. I wanted to do an episode on Sandy. It's obviously a very high impact event in the last 5 years. And it really impacted some people that I know on the Jersey Shore. And so I wanted to talk to people and see, you know, how they prepared for it. How soon did they hear about it? You know, what kind of time did they have when they really realized it was going to be a significant threat? But as we now know that Tropical Storm Hermine is tracking up the East Coast and is looking to have pretty similar impacts in terms of storm surge, you know, wind gusts, coastal erosion. So it may be a combination of talking to people about both storms, how they might compare, how they might be different, and how people reacted differently to both storms.
Yeah, you know, you were planning on doing a show on Sandy a month ago, and just so happened that Hermine decided to go into the similar area and impact the similar areas. So it's quite the timing, and you know, we'll look forward to that. It'll be published sometime in late September, I believe, maybe early October. So welcome to the team, and we're really looking forward to your podcast.
Thanks. I'm excited to get it out to you guys.
So let's get back to our regularly scheduled programming and listen in on the conversation I had with my exasperated mother.
That was the most incredible storm I've ever been in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, all the weather people said nothing was going to happen. Everything was going to blow over by the time evening came along. It was going to be fine, right?
Uh-huh.
So I got there, and it just was sprinkling a little bit, enough to stay undercover. So I went into they have that little visitor center.
Just some context here. My mom is going to a Steely Dan concert at Red Rocks in Morrison, Colorado. Red Rocks is a beautiful venue that hosts a variety of concerts throughout the summer, and it sits just west of Denver at the beginning of the Rocky Mountain foothills. As it is for the entire Colorado Front Range in the summer, it's pretty common to get a shower or thunderstorm at Red Rocks. So my mom's experience probably isn't that out of the ordinary.
The whole time it was thundering and lightning, right?
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, like, really close. But they let me in. I was, like, the last person to get in, and then they told everybody else to go to their cars because the lightning. So I got in, and that's when I went into the visitor center. And then we went and sat at our seats, and Stephen Wynn was starting to play. He was, like, a half hour into it, I think. So it started late anyway because it was raining. So he played for a half hour till, like, I don't know, 7:30, 7:45, and then suddenly he got on stage. He goes, "I think the weather, we're going to stop now because of the weather." So then I noticed like this big, huge, dark cloud. It suddenly got really dark. And I'm like, this does not look good. And then it started sprinkling. And then the guy said, everybody needs to go to their cars now. And we're like, what? So by the time we went past our seats to the area to go up the stairs, it started hailing so badly that nobody could move.
My God.
I mean, because it was so bad, like, you needed to get undercover. And luckily, I had one of those stadium seats over my head.
Yeah.
I was able to put it over my head because the pounding of the hail on my back hurt. It really hurt. And it was raining and hailing and, oh, my God. And then I saw where the steps were flooding.
Yeah.
The rain had poured down so much that the steps, it was like floods all the way down the steps. And, like, the trees were on everybody's backs, like leaves and pine cones and everything. And it seemed like it went on forever, like 20 minutes.
So did the concert end and you had everyone to their cars, or?
No, we had to wait, like, under wherever we were until the hail stopped. There was nowhere to go.
If you've never been to Red Rocks, it's kind of a tricky place to get to. There are essentially three small roads that lead there with a ton of parking along them as you get nearer. You then walk the rest of the way up to the amphitheater. Getting thousands of people back to their cars in 10 minutes or less would be essentially impossible to do. Additionally, they don't normally cancel shows, just postpone during times of bad weather. So when nasty weather rolls through, a lot of people end up just hanging around out in the open and wait it out. Because A, it's tough to go back, and B, the show's going to start back afterwards, so why leave? Back to our conversation.
I thought for sure they would cancel, but they didn't cancel. And then by the time, because Stephen Winwood came back on after we all sat down and everything stopped, and then they only played like a few songs. And then there was an intermission, and by the time Steely Dan got on, the sky was, there were no clouds right underneath, right on top of Red Rock. But that it was a harrowing storm. It was so bad.
Wow.
I never want to be in a storm like that again, ever.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can't believe they're even letting people in with this lightning.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
No, because there's nowhere to go.
Yeah. Wow.
And everybody's in the visitor center. It's like wall-to-wall people. You're in there like sardines. I mean, that whole place was sold out. It's like how it holds like over 9,000 people in there, and it was sold out. Well, I mean, seriously, like telling us a minute before the hail starts to go to your car, what kind of plan is that? I mean, who are they talking to about this weather?
Great question, Mom. My mom's been around a weather geek like me long enough that she asks these types of questions after an experience like that. And yeah, I have the same exact questions as her. So I gave Red Rocks a call. Unfortunately, they wouldn't let me use the audio for the show, but they did answer all my questions. They use a private weather service called Skyview. Skyview gives them a call when there's a lightning risk or lightning within 5 miles. At that point, Red Rocks makes the decision to either clear the amphitheater or keep the show going. If they clear the amphitheater, everyone is told to go back to their cars, which we discussed is a pretty tricky process. Some people take shelter in the visitor center and pack in like sardines, like my mom described, but Red Rocks made it very clear they don't have space to accommodate 10,000 people under shelter, so their only real move is to ask everyone to go back into their car. I asked them if everyone makes it back to their cars, and the response was pretty troubling. A representative told me that they're an amphitheater on the side of a mountain, and there's some risk you have to assume when you're purchasing a ticket to Red Rocks. I understand where they're coming from. Most people in Colorado know that evening thunderstorms happen during the summer fairly frequently. But I was on their site, and nowhere could I find the mention of assuming risk when it comes to weather. The only weather tidbit I could find on their site is as follows. Leaving the amphitheater and re-entering is only permitted in weather-related or medical emergencies. They also included bring a rain jacket and sweatshirt for inclement weather. But that's it. From my perspective, that doesn't cut it. Red Rocks is owned and operated by the City and County of Denver, which means it has the Denver Emergency Management at its disposal. So I got in touch with the operation and logistics coordinator at the Denver Emergency Management Office to see what coordination goes on between his office and Red Rocks.
Yeah, so obviously it kind of depends on the venue itself. Some of them are, you know, obviously indoors. Others of them, like Red Rocks, are outside. But yes, to, you know, kind of the simple answer is just, is yes. The National Weather Service is the one who will typically send out the first alerts when there is a weather event occurring within the Denver metro area. And depending on the type of alert, they'll either send out what's called a WEA alert or a wireless emergency alert. That's like the same thing you would see whenever your phone buzzes for an Amber Alert, and it'll go out to anybody in the affected area. But then specific to those concerts and venues, we have special, I guess they're not special, but we have communication with them so that if there was something specific to Red Rocks or specific to like an outdoor park, we can get in touch with their emergency personnel to make sure that they can tell their attendees to either then go inside or seek shelter or whatever, you know, the best course of action is.
And therein lies the problem. The best course of action for Red Rocks is to have 10,000 people either squeeze into bathrooms in the visitor center or rush to their cars. Red Rocks is getting good, timely weather information, but when they get that information, there's really not much they can do to get the entirety of their attendees swiftly out of harm's way. So how useful is that information? Even if they could get everyone to their car in time, your vehicle is no place to be during a severe hail or windstorm. Fortunately, I could not find anything in the news related to weather injuries at Red Rocks, but in 2007, a jogger about a mile away was struck and killed by lightning. In my opinion, it's only a matter of time before the weather creates a serious situation at Red Rocks. To be fair to them, they're not alone. Most large outside venues face a similar problem. So we know the problem. Let's find a solution. In August of 2012, a line of storms containing dangerous lightning and straight-line winds over 70 miles per hour ripped through Illinois with Chicago in its path. On this same day, a large concert called Lollapalooza, hosting over 70,000 people, was ongoing in downtown Chicago. The line of storms ended up intercepting Chicago during the concert, but miraculously, not a single attendee was hurt. I say miraculously, but this was both miraculous and not so miraculous at the same time. A ton of planning had gone into this event to assure that in the case of a severe weather situation, there would be no injuries. The concert staff had established predetermined evacuation facilities and had engaged in constant communication with the National Weather Service and emergency management the day before and day of. Combined with an accurate forecast by the National Weather Service, not a single person ended up in harm's way. To produce more results like this, the National Weather Service has an initiative called Storm Ready. To explain a little more about Storm Ready, I talked with Warning Coordination Meteorologist of the Boulder National Weather Service, Bob Glancy.
Okay, so we have two types. We have a Storm Ready community, and they there's some checkoffs, multiple ways to receive warnings, multiple ways to share warnings with their citizens. They have, you know, they've taken part in education of the citizens. They have an EOC. They have a dispatch center. And so this all started many, many years ago. There was an event in the Tulsa area where a tornado warning had been issued, and it was like 5 minutes to midnight, and it shift changed. And power went out, and so the warning was never received at the dispatch center. Okay. And so the local office down there said, okay, well, what can we do? And they said, well, you know, if you're relying on only one way to get a warning and, you know, power goes out, you may not get that warning. So there's a number of ways to do that. And so it started at one office, and then it spread to the whole country. So we have basically local cities and counties that are under the Storm Ready program, and then we have businesses that look, it's a little simpler application process, but businesses can qualify as Storm Ready supporters. So we have some malls and ballparks and military establishments that have done that.
What's the benefit for them to be to have that kind of stamp of being Storm Ready?
There's some benefits that result from it in a local community. The ones that have gone through the process tend to be a little more resilient. We can't prevent severe weather, such as floods and blizzards. But the ones that have gone through it have looked at how do we maintain communications and that sort of thing in a big weather event. And so the net impact has been less in those communities that have actually gone through the process. There is also one monetary benefit of Storm Ready is a community that is part of the National Flood Insurance Program gets some reduction in rates as a result of being Storm Ready.
So the Storm Ready initiative places a huge importance on communication of weather information. To be Storm Ready, your organization has to have multiple ways of receiving and disseminating weather warnings. There also must be a semi-constant communication to the public about what those warnings mean, so that when the time comes, they know what to expect. I was curious if the Storm Ready initiative required communities or venues to have a plan for their attendees.
Yeah, we do encourage large events like that to have a plan. There's a sign up for organizations. Let's say it's a bike race or something. We just had one, a New West Fest in Fort Collins that called up, and they can apply for, or they can sign up for close weather support during events. And so this is part of our decision support services. So they can ask for a daily briefing and a call if severe weather would be threatening the event during the event time. So there's more and more and more events that are looking at the public safety and planning for bad weather.
Gotcha.
And any impacts to the public during the event.
Being Storm Ready also requires organizations to have an emergency operations plan, which would include an outline to get attendees to a safe place. So the formula is there. Being a Storm Ready organization assures that you are just that, ready for a storm. You're ready to receive weather information, you're ready to relay that information to the public, and you're ready to take appropriate actions to assure safety. In a perfect world, all venues that held a certain number of people at any given time would be required to be Storm Ready. But that's in a perfect world. Let's start with Red Rocks. When I first started creating this episode, I was hoping to focus on lightning safety at various outdoor events, but I ended up focusing on the event side and not just lightning. And we also ended up kind of diving down the Storm Ready program path. Before I went down that route, I had an amazing conversation with Sharon, a woman from Daytona Beach, Florida.
This was the late 50s because I was about 10 years old. And in the summertime, I spent a lot of time at my grandfather's farm. And it was in a farming community, which was not far from Dalton, Georgia, which is North Georgia. And it was, I know, well after the 4th because we'd already had a big picnic and the fireworks and stuff. And so all the kids around the area gathered in this huge field, and that was where we played softball or, you know, threw a baseball back and forth or flew kites because there was nothing around except this giant 150-year-old maple tree. But other than that, there was this huge field, and it had just been freshly mown, and they had rolled up the hay bales, and we were kind of using those as bases. And we were just, it was clear as a bell, not a cloud in the sky, and probably, you know, early afternoon. And just all of a sudden, we heard this crack, and everybody looked, and there was this one little boy just standing there, and you actually could see the lightning go up one side and down the other side of him. And he stood there briefly just smoking. I mean, it was just like the cartoons that you see, not to make light of it. But not a raindrop, not thunder, nothing. Just this child being struck. Of course, he stood there as he was smoking. He was kind of a beige color all over. It burned his clothes. And he fell. And of course, back then, nobody knew anything about CPR. And the only thing, one of the other little boys, actually it was his older brother, ran to get his dad, and his dad came with his pickup truck, and they put him in the truck and took him to the hospital, because that, in, like I say, late 50s, nobody knew anything else to do. And, of course, he died.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was pretty traumatic for a bunch of kids.
Yeah, that is terrible. Wow.
But the weather conditions apparently have nothing to do with, you know, whether lightning's going to strike. And we weren't anywhere near the tree. A lot of people say that trees draw lightning, but we weren't anywhere near the tree. We were just all out in the midst of this field. And there was at least two more kids close enough that if they took a step and reached forward, they could have touched him. But it just came straight down and got him. My grandfather had always said, and he was a man of few words with good, you know, walking around sense, as he called it. If you see lightning, you don't have to be afraid. It's the one that you don't see that you need to be afraid of.
I thought this phrase was interesting. While you still should have some sense of fear if you see lightning fairly close to you, you'll really never see the bolt that strikes you. Back to Sharon.
It's really funny. I don't think about it that much. In fact, I still, and I think about it once I am standing there doing it. I've been known to stand at the door and look out at a lightning or thunderstorm because I love storms. To me, they're extremely cathartic. And I love to watch the light show. And, you know, I know that it's not very smart because I lived in Alabama for a few years in Decatur. And a friend of mine there, back before there was such a thing as, you know, our cell phones, so many of them, and the cordless phone, she had one sitting on her kitchen counter, and lightning actually came through the apartment building, hit that phone, blew the receiver off in the floor, and just melted the base, absolutely melted it. And, of course, it took out her TV as well, because it was, that electricity is, lightning is not anything you want to mess with, but I will say this, when it's getting really bad here now, and they have said don't have anything, including your cell phone, you know, in your hand when you see a lot of lightning, I won't be on the phone in it. I'm sorry if it interferes with somebody else. I just, if they think I'm rude, I'll just say, look, it's lightning here. I'm hanging up. I'll call you back when the lightning's passed.
Yeah, better safe than sorry.
Exactly. Because you just never know. I mean, it's one of those things that we can... I moved here from Tennessee 4 years ago, and of course everyone thought I was nuts because I was moving to, quote, hurricane country. And I said, I have lived in Tornado Alley most of my life. I said, at least you know days ahead to look out for a hurricane. But with tornadoes, you get almost no warning, and with lightning, there's none at all. It's just wherever it decides to come down, it's coming down.
A few interesting things from this last part here. She has a good relative sense of the warning time for each weather event. Hurricanes have a much longer lead time compared to tornadoes, and with lightning, there's essentially no warning. I'll agree with her that there's no warning in terms of when and where a lightning bolt will strike, which, by the way, is the part that terrifies me when it comes to lightning. But you do know when you're in a higher risk situation for lightning, like in a storm or on top of a mountain. So be smart about lightning. And as the National Weather Service would say, when thunder roars, go indoors. we hopped around a bit in this episode, but we mainly discussed how to be a storm-ready organization and the importance of that title. While this is a great initiative, there needs to be a bigger push for venues to join the cause. Just as a citizen, it's great to know for yourself what different types of weather will mean for you and your safety, and how to adequately prepare for them, but it's an absolute must for venues that hold large numbers of attendees to be responsible. So I'm curious, what do you think? Should venues hold more responsibility for assuring their attendees' safety? Let us know what you think by sending us a tweet at the WX Junkies, leaving a comment on our website, theweatherjunkies.com, or sending us an email at theweatherjunkies@gmail.com. As always, please feel free to leave a rating or review on iTunes. In late September or early October, we'll have our next episode of Weather Ready or Not, with a focus on the impacts of Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast. That'll come from our newest member that you met a moment ago, Becky Elliott. Until then, check out our live show every Thursday evening, where I'm joined by an on-air meteorologist, Tyler Jankowski, to discuss the latest buzz in the weather enterprise. For now, I'm Dakota Smith. Thanks for listening.